Damn!
They all heard the voice, thin, reedy, and petulant. It came from everywhere around them. Small, soft white lights appeared in the air, spun around one another with increasing speed, and then imploded. The god blinked and rocked back and forth as he tried to steady himself.
"Oh, my goodness," he said. "What do I look like?"
He held up a hand in front of his face and flexed his fingers experimentally.
"Ah!"
The hand patted his face, his bald head, and lingered for a moment on the long white beard. He seemed puzzled.
"What's this?"
he said.
A beard?" said Ponder.
The god looked down at his long white robe.
"Oh, patriarchality. Ah, well, let me see now."
He seemed to pull himself together, focused his gaze on Ridcully, and his huge white eyebrows met like angry caterpillars.
"Be gone from this place, or I will smite thee,"
he commanded.
"Why?"
The god looked taken aback.
"Why? You can't ask why in this situation."
"Why not?" The god looked slightly panicky.
"Because, thou must go from this place, lest I visit thee with boils."
"Really? Most people would bring a bottle of wine," said Ridcully. The god hesitated.
"What?"
he said.
"Or cake," said the dean. "Cake is a good present if you're visiting someone."
"It depends on what kind of cake," said the senior wrangler. "Sponge cake, I've always thought, is a bit of an insult. Something with a bit of marzipan is to be preferred." "Be gone from this place, lest I visit you with cake," said the god.
"It's better than boils," said Ridcully.
"Provided it's not sponge," said the senior wrangler.
The problem faced by the god was that, while he had never encountered wizards before, the wizards had, in their student days, met more or less on a weekly basis things that threatened them horribly as a matter of course. Boils didn't hold much of a menace when rogue demons had wanted to rip your head off and do terrible things down the hole.
"Listen," said the god. "I happen to be the god in these parts, do you understand? I am, in fact, omnipotent."
"I'd prefer that, what is it, you know, the cake with the pink and yellow squares," muttered the senior wrangler, "because wizards tend to follow a thought all the way through."
"You're a bit small, then," said the dean.
"And the sugary marzipan on the outside. It's marvellous stuff." The god finally realized what else had been bothering him. Scale was always tricky in these matters. Being 3 feet high was not adding anything to his authority.
"Damn!"
he said again.
"Why am I so small?"
"Size isn't everything," said Ridcully.
"People always smirk when they say that. I can't think why."
"You're absolutely right,"
snapped the god, as if Ridcully had triggered an entirely new train of thought.
"Look at amoebas, except that, of course, you can't, because they're so small. Adaptable, efficient, and practically immortal. Wonderful things, amoebas."
His little eyes misted over.
"Best day's work I ever did." "Excuse me, sir, but exactly what kind of god are you?"
said Ponder.
"And is there cake or not?"
said the senior wrangler. The god glared up at him.
"I beg your pardon,"
he said.
"I meant, what is it that you're the god of?"
said Ponder.
"I said, what about this cake you're supposed to have?"
said the senior wrangler.
"Senior wrangler?"
"Yes, Arch-Chancellor."
"Cake is not the issue here.
But he said..."
"Your comments have been taken on board, Senior Wrangler, and they will be thrown over the side as soon as we leave harbour.
Do continue, God, please." For a moment, the god looked in a thunderbolt mood, and then sagged. He sat down on a rock.
"Oh, all that smiting talk doesn't really work, does it?"
he said gloomily.
"You don't have to be nice about it, I could tell. I could give you boils, you understand. It's just that I can't really see the point. They clear up after a while anyway. And it is rather bullying people, isn't it? To tell you the truth, I'm something of an atheist."
"Sorry," said Ridcully. "You are an atheist god?" The god looked at their expressions.
"Yeah, I know," he said. "It's a bit of a bottomer, isn't it?"
He stroked his long white beard.
"Why exactly have I got this?"
"You didn't shave this morning?" said Ridcully.
"I mean, I simply tried to appear in front of you in a form that you recognise as godly,"
said the god.
"A long beard and a nightshirt seem to be the thing, although the facial hair is a little puzzling."
"It's a sign of wisdom," said Ridcully.
"Said to be,"
said Ponder, who'd never been able to grow one.
"Wisdom, insight, acumen, learning," said the god thoughtfully. "Oh, the length of the hair improves the operation of the cognitive functions. Some sort of cooling arrangement, perhaps?"
"Never really thought about it," said Ridcully.
"The beard gets longer as more wisdom is acquired," said the god. "I'm not sure it's actually a case of cause and effect,"
Ponder ventured.
"I'm afraid I don't get about as much as I should," said the god sadly. "To be frank, I find religion rather offensive."
He heaved a big sigh and seemed to look even smaller.
"Honest, I really do try, but there are some days when life just gets me down. Oh, excuse me, liquid seems to be running out of my breathing tubes." "Would you like to blow your nose?" said Ponder.
The god looked panicky.
"Where to? I mean, you sort of... Hold, look, here's my handkerchief. You just sort of put it over your nose and sort of, well, snuffle into it." "Snuffle,"
said the god.
"Interesting. And what a curiously white leaf."
"No, it's a cotton handkerchief," said Ponder. "It's made."
He stopped there. He knew that handkerchiefs were made, and cotton was involved, and he had some vague recollection of looms and things, but when you got right down to it, you obtained handkerchiefs by going into a shop and saying, "I'd like a dozen of the reinforced white ones, please. And how much do you charge for embroidering initials in the corners?"
"You mean created?"
said the god, suddenly very suspicious.
"Are you gods too?"
Beside his foot, a small shoot pushed through the sand and began to grow rapidly.
"No, no," said Ponder. "You just take some cotton and hammer it flat, I think, and you get handkerchiefs." "Oh, then you're tool-using creatures,"
said the god, relaxing a little. The shoot near his foot was already a plant now and putting out leaves and a flower bud. He blew his nose loudly. The wizards drew closer. They were not, of course, afraid of gods, but gods tended to have uncertain tempers, and a wise man kept away from them. However, it's hard to be frightened of someone who's having a good blow.
You really the god in these parts?"
said Ridcully. The god sighed.
"Yes," he said. "I thought it would be so easy, you know. Just one small island. I could start all over again. Do it properly. But it's all going completely wrong."
Beside him, the little plant opened a nondescript yellow flower.
"Start all over again?"
"Yes. You know, godliness."
The god waved a hand in the direction of the hub.
"I used to work over there," he said. "Basic general godding. You know, making people out of clay, old toenails and so on. And then sitting on mountain tops and casting thunderbolts and all the rest of it. Although,"
he leaned forward and lowered his voice,
"very few gods can actually do that, you know."
"Really?"
said Ridcully, fascinated.
"Very hard thing to steer, lightning. Mostly we waited until a thunderbolt happened to hit some poor soul, and then spake in a voice of thunder, and said it was his fault for being a sinner. I mean, they were bound to have done something, weren't they?"
The god blew his nose again.
"Quite depressing, really. Anyway, I suppose the rot set in when I tried to see if it was possible to breed a more inflammable cow."
He looked at the questioning expressions.
"Burnt offerings, you see. Cows don't actually burn all that well. They're naturally rather soggy creatures, and frankly, everyone was running out of wood."
They carried on staring at him. He tried again.
"I really couldn't see the point of the whole business, to tell you the truth. Shouting, smiting, getting angry all the time.
Don't think anyone was getting anything out of it, really. But the worst part, you know, the worst part? The worst part was that if you actually stopped the smiting, people wandered off and worshipped someone else. It's hard to believe, isn't it? They'd say things like, things were a lot better when there was more smiting, and if there was more smiting, it'd be a lot safer to walk the streets. Especially since all that had really happened was that some poor shepherd who had just happened to be in the wrong place during a thunderstorm had caught a stray bolt. And then the priests would say, well, we all know about shepherds, don't we? And now the gods are angry, and we could do with a much bigger temple, thank you.
Typical priestly behaviour, sniffed the dean.
But they often believed it,
the god almost wailed.
It was really so depressing. I think that before we made humanity, we broke the mould. There'd be a bad weather front, a few silly shepherds would happen to be in the wrong place at the wrong time, and next thing you know, it was standing room only on the sacrificial stones, and you couldn't see for the smoke.
He had another good blow on a piece of Ponder's handkerchief that had so far remained dry.
I mean, I tried. God knows I tried. And since that's me, I don't know what I'm talking about. Thou shalt lie down flat in thundery weather, I said. Thou shalt sight the midden a long way from the well, I said. I even told them, thou shalt really try to get along with one another.
Did it work?
I can't say for sure. Everyone was slaughtered by the followers of the god in the next valley, who told them to kill everyone who didn't believe in him. Ghastly fellow, I'm afraid.
And the flaming cows, said Ridcully.
The what?
Said the god, sunk in misery.
The more inflammable cow, said Ponder.
Oh, yes. Another good idea that didn't work. I just thought, you know, that if you could find the bit in, say, an oak tree which says, be inflammable, and glue it into the bit of the cow which says, be soggy, it'd save a lot of trouble. Unfortunately, that produced a sort of bush that made distressing noises and squirted milk. But I could see that the principle was sound. And frankly, since my believers were all dead or living in the next valley by then, I thought to hell with it all. I'd come back here and get to grips with it and do it all more sensibly.
He brightened up a bit.
You know, it's amazing what you get if you break even the common cow down into very small bits.
Soup, said Ridcully,
because sooner or later, everything is just a set of instructions.
The god went on, apparently not listening.
That's just what I've always said
Ponder.
Have you?
Said the god, peering at him.
Well, anyway, that's how it all began. I thought it would be a much better idea to create creatures that could change their own instructions when they needed to, you see.
Oh, you mean evolution, said Ponder Stibbons.
Do I?
The god looked thoughtful.
Changing over time. Yes, that's actually quite a good word, isn't it? Evolution. Yes, I suppose that's what I do. Unfortunately, it doesn't seem to be working properly.
Beside him there was a pop. The little plant had fruited. Its pod had sprung open, and there appeared to be, bunched up like a chrysanthemum, a fresh white hanky.
Oh, you see, he said, that's the sort of thing I'm up against. Everything is so completely selfish about it.
He took the handkerchief in an absent-minded way, blew his nose on it, crumpled it up, and dropped it on the ground.
I'm sorry about the boat, he continued. It was a bit of a rush job, you see. I just didn't want anyone upsetting everything, but I really don't believe in smiting, so I thought that since you wanted to leave here, I should help you do so as soon as possible. I think I did a rather good job in the circumstances. It'll find a new land automatically, I think. So, why didn't you go?
The bare naked lady on the front was a bit of a giveaway, said Ridcully.
The what?
The god peered in the direction of the boat.
These eyes are not particularly efficient. Oh dear, yes, the figure. Morphic bloody resonance again. Will you stop doing that?
The handkerchief plant had just put forth another fruit. The god narrowed his eyes, pointed his finger, and incinerated it. As one man, the wizard stepped back.
Oh, stop concentrating for 5 minutes and everything loses any sense of discipline, said the god. Everything wants to make itself damn useful. I can't think why.
Sorry, am I getting this right? You're a god of evolution? Said Ponder.
Is that wrong?
Said the god, anxiously.
But it's been happening for ages, sir.
Has it? But I only started a few years ago. Do you mean someone else is doing it?
I'm afraid so, sir, said Ponder. People breed dogs for fierceness and racehorses for speed, and, well, even my uncle can do amazing things with his nuts, sir.
And everyone knows that you can cross a river with a bridge, said Ridcully.
Can you? Said the god of evolution seriously. I'd have thought that you simply get some very soggy wood.
Oh, dear.
Ridcully winked at Ponder Stibbons. Gods were often not good at humour, and this one was even worse than Ridcully.
We're back in time, Mr. Stibbons, he said. It may not have happened already, yet.
Oh, yes, said Ponder.
Anyway, two gods of evolution wouldn't be a bad thing, would they? Said Ridcully. Makes it a lot more interesting. The one who's best at it would win.
The god stared at him with his mouth open. Then he shut it just enough to mouth Ridcully's words to himself, snapped his fingers, and vanished in a puff of little white lights.
Now you've done it, said the lecturer in recent rooms.
No cake for you, said the bursar.
All I said was, the one who's best at it would win, said Ridcully. Actually, he didn't look upset, said Ponder. He looked as if he'd suddenly realized something.
Ridcully looked up at the small mountain in the centre of the island and appeared to reach a decision.
All right, we'll leave, he said. The reason this island's so odd is that some rather daft god is messing around with it. That's a pretty good explanation as far as I'm concerned.
But, sir, Ponder began, see that little vine just by the senior wrangler there? It's only been growing for the last 10 minutes, said the dean.
It looked like a small cucumber vine, except that the fruits were yellow and oblong.
"Pass me your penknife, Mr. Stibbons," said Ridcully.
Ridcully sliced the fruit in half. It wasn't fully ripe yet, but the pattern of pink and yellow squares was clearly visible, surrounded by a layer of something sticky and sweet.
"But I only thought about that cake 10 minutes ago," said the senior wrangler.
"Seems perfectly logical to me," said Ridcully. "I mean, here we are, wizards. We move about. We want to leave the island. What will we take with us? Anyone?"
"Food, obviously," said Ponder. "But,
right. If I was a vegetable, I'd want to make myself useful in a hurry, yes? No good hanging around for 1,000 years just growing bigger seeds. No fear. All those other plants might come up with a better idea in the meantime. No, you see an opportunity and you go for it. There might not be another boat along for years."
"Millennia," said the dean.
"Even longer," Ridcully agreed. "Survival of the fastest, eh? So I suggest we load up and go, gentlemen."
"What, just like that?" said Ponder.
Certainly. Why not?
But think of the things we could learn here," said Ponder. "The possibilities are breathtaking. At least there's a god who's actually got the right idea. At least we can get some answers to all the important questions. We can't just go. I mean, not go. I mean, we're wizards, aren't we?"
He was aware that he had their full attention, something that wizards did not often give. Usually they defined listening as a period in which you worked out what you were going to say next. It was disconcerting. Then the spell broke. The senior wrangler shook his head.
"Curious way of looking at things," he said, turning away.
"So, I vote we take plenty of those cheese nuts, Arch-Chancellor."
"Good provisioning is the essence of successful exploration," said the dean. "Quite a roomy vessel, too, so we needn't stint."
Ridcully pulled himself aboard via a trailing tendril and sniffed.
"Smells rather like pumpkin," he said.
"Always liked pumpkin, a very versatile vegetable."
Ponder put a hand over his eyes.
"Oh, really?" he said wearily. "A group of unseen university wizards are seriously considering putting to sea on an edible boat?
Fried, boiled, a good base for a soup stock, and of course, excellent in pies," said the Arch-Chancellor happily. "Also, the seeds are a tasty snack."
"Good with butter," said the Chair of Indefinite Studies. "I suppose there isn't a butter plant anywhere, is there?"
"There will be soon," said the Dean. "Give us a hand up, will you, Arch-Chancellor?"
Ponder exploded. "I don't believe this," he said. "You're turning your back on an astonishing God-given opportunity."
"Absolutely, Mr. Stibbons," said Ridcully from above. "No offence meant, of course, but if the choice is a trip on the briny deep or staying on a small island with someone trying to create a more inflammable cow, then you can call me Salty Sam."
"Is this the poop deck?" said the Dean.
"I hope not," said Ridcully briskly. "You see, Stibbons..."
"Are you sure?" said the Dean.
"I'm sure, Dean. You see, Stibbons, when you've had a little more experience in these matters, you'll learn that there's nothing more dangerous than a god with too much time on his hands."
"Except an enraged mother bear," said the senior wrangler.
"No, they're far more dangerous, not when they're really close."
"If it was the poop deck, how would we know?" said the Dean.
Ponder shook his head. There were times when the desire to climb the thaumaturgical ladder was seriously blunted, and one of them was when you saw what was on top.
I just don't know what to say," he said. "I am frankly astonished."
"Well done, lad. So run along and get some bananas, will you? Green ones will keep better. And don't look so upset. When it comes to gods, I have to say, you can give me one of the Make Out of Clay and Smite 'em Brigade any day of the week. That's the kind of god you can deal with."
"The practically human sort," said the Dean.
"Exactly."
"Call me overly picky," said the Chair of Indefinite Studies, "but I'd prefer not to be around a god who might suddenly decide I'd run faster with 3 extra legs."
"Exactly.
Is there something wrong, Stibbons?"
"Oh, he's gone. Oh, well, no doubt he'll be back. And, Dean?"
"Yes, Arch-Chancellor?"
"I can't help thinking you're working up to some sort of horrible joke about a poop deck."
"I'd prefer not, if it's all the same to you."
"You all right, mate?"
No one in the world had ever been so pleased to see Crocodile Crocodile before. Rincewind let himself be pulled upright. His hand, against all expectation, was not blue and 3 times its normal size.
"That bloody kangaroo," he muttered, using the hand to wave away the eternal flies.
"What kangaroo was that, mate?" said the Crocodile, helping him back towards the pub.
Rincewind looked around. There were just the normal components of the local scenery, dry-looking bushes, red dirt, and a million circling flies.
"The one I was talking to just now."
"I was just sweeping up, and I saw you dancing around yelling," said the Crocodile. "I didn't see no kangaroo."
"It's probably a magic kangaroo," said Rincewind wearily.
"Oh, right, a magic kangaroo," said Crocodile. "No worries. I think maybe I'd better make you up the cure for drinking too much beer, mate."
"What's the cure?"
"More beer."
"How much beer did I have last night, then?"
"About 20 pints."
"Don't be silly. No one can even hold that much beer."
"Oh, you didn't hang on to much of it at all, mate. No worries. We like a man who can't hold his beer."
In the fetid flea pit of Rincewind's brain, the projectionist of memory put on reel 2. Recollection began to flicker. He shuddered.
"Was I singing a song?" he said.
"Too right. You kept pointing to the root beer poster and singing."
The Crocodile's huge jaws moved as he tried to remember.
"Tie me kangaroo up. Bloody good song."
"And then I..."
"Then you lost all your money playing 2 up with Daggy's shearing gang."
"That's... there were these 2 coins, and the bloke had tossed them in the air, and you had to bet on how they'd come down."
"Right. And you kept betting they wouldn't come down at all. Said it was bound to happen sooner or later.
You got good odds, though." "I lost all the money Mad gave me?"
"Yep."
"How was I paying for my beer, then?"
The blokes was queuing up to buy it for you. They said you were better than a day at the races."
"And then I, there was something about sheep." He looked horrified. "Oh, no."
"Oh, yeah. You said, strain the fine crones $1 a time for giving a sheep a haircut. I could do a beaut soft job like that with my eyes shut.
Too right, no flaming worries, boy. I've buns a shoot through ye. Gods, this is good beer.
Oh, gods. Did anyone hit me?
Nah, mate. They reckoned you were a good sport. Especially when you wagered 500 squids, you could beat their best man at shearing.
I couldn't have done that. I'm not a betting man.
Well, I am, and if you've been shooting a line, I wouldn't give a tuppence for your chances, Rinso.
Rinso? Said Rincewind weakly. He looked at his beer glass. What's in this stuff?
Your mate Mad said you were this big wizard and could kill people by just pointing at them and shouting, said Crocodile. I wouldn't mind seeing that.
Rincewind looked up desperately, and his eye caught the Rue Beer poster. It showed some of the damn silly trees they had there, and the arid red earth, and nothing else.
Huh? What's that?
Said the Crocodile.
What happened to the kangaroo?
Rincewind said hoarsely.
What kangaroo?
There was a kangaroo on that poster last night, wasn't there?
Crocodile peered at the poster.
I'm better at smell, he admitted at last. But I've got to admit it. It smells like it's gone.
Something very strange is going on here, said Rincewind. This is a very strange country.
We got an opera house, Crocodile volunteered. That's culture.
And 93 words for being sick?
Yeah, well, we were a very vocal people.
Did I really bet 500... what was it?
Squids.
Squids I haven't got.
Yep.
So I'll probably get killed if I lose, right?
Nah worries.
I wish people had stopped saying that.
He caught sight of the poster again.
That kangaroo's back.
The Crocodile turned around awkwardly, walked up to the poster and sniffed.
Could be,
he said cautiously.
And it's facing the wrong way.
Take it easy, mate,
said Crocodile Dongo, looking concerned. Rincewind shuddered.
You're right, he said. It's the heat of the flies getting to me. It must be.
Dongo poured him another beer.
Ah, well, beer's good for the heat, he said. Can't do anything about the bloody flies, though.
Rincewind started a nod and stopped. He removed his hat and looked at it critically. Then he waved a hand up and down in front of his face, temporarily dislodging a few flies. Finally, he looked thoughtfully at a row of bottles.
Got any string? He said.
After a few experiments and some mild concussion, Dongo advanced the opinion that it'd be better with just the corks. The luggage was lost. Usually it could find its way anywhere in time and space, but trying to do that now was like a man trying to keep his footing on two moving walkways heading in opposite directions, and it simply couldn't cope. It knew it had been stuck underground for a long time, but it also knew that it had been stuck underground for about 5 minutes. The luggage had no brain as such, even though an outsider might well get the impression that it could think. What it did do was react, in quite complex ways, to its environment. Usually this involved finding something to kick, as is the case with most sapient creatures. Currently it was ambling along a dusty track. Occasionally its lid would snap at flies, but without much enthusiasm. Its opal coating glowed in the sunlight.
Oh, isn't that pretty? Fetch it here, you two.
It paid no attention to the brightly coloured cart that stopped a little way along the track. It was possibly aware at some level that people had got out and were staring at it, but it didn't resist when they appeared to reach a decision and lifted it onto the cart. It didn't know where it had to go, and since it also didn't know where this cart was going, perhaps it would take it there. It waited a decent while after it had been put down, and then took in its surroundings. It had been stacked up by a lot of other boxes and suitcases, which was comforting. After 5 minutes spent being underground for millions of years, the luggage felt that it was due some quality time. And it didn't even resist when someone opened its lid and filled it up with shoes. Quite large shoes, the luggage noticed, and many of them with interesting heels and inventive ways with silk and sequins. They were clearly ladies' shoes. That was good, the luggage thought, or emoted, or reacted. Ladies tended to lead quieter lives. The purple cart rumbled off, painted crudely on the back with the words, Petunia, the Desert Princess. Rincewind looked hard at the shears that the head shearer was waving. They looked sharp.
You know what we do to people who go back on a bet round here?
said Daggy, the gang boss.
But I was drunk.
So are we. So what? Rincewind looked out across the sheep pens. He knew what sheep were, of course, and had come into contact with them on many occasions, although normally in the company of mixed vegetables. He'd even had a toy stuffed lamb as a child. But there is something hugely unlovable about sheep, a kind of mad, eye-rolling brainlessness smelling of damp wool and panic. Many religions extol the virtues of the meek, but Rincewind had never trusted them. The meek could turn very nasty at times. On the other hand, they were covered in wool, and the shears looked pretty keen. How hard could it be? His radar told him that trying and failing was probably a lot less of a crime than not trying at all. "Can I have a trial run?" he said. A sheep was dragged out of the pens and flung down in front of him. Rincewind gave Daggy what he hoped was the smile of one craftsman to another, but smiling at Daggy was like throwing meringues against a cliff. "Can I have a chair and a towel and two mirrors and a comb?" he said. Daggy's look of intense suspicion deepened.
"What's this? What do you want all that for?"
Got to do it properly, haven't I?